reported last week on a study by the Kansas State University. The life of Ogallala Aquifer could be extended several decades, but only if water usage is reduced. A four-year study by researchers from Kansas State University found there is going to be agriculture production in Kansas and corn production and cattle production really for the foreseeable future, David Stewart, lead author of the study, said in an interview last week. But without conservation, he said, the future is bleak. The aquifer yields 30% of the nation's irrigated groundwater, the study said. It could last until 2110 or longer if farmers were to cut 20% of their usage or more beginning now, but that would reduce agricultural production to the levels of 15 or 20 years ago. Kansas alone pumped 1.3 trillion gallons in 2011, more than enough to fill Lake Okeechobee, the huge lake in Florida. The study was done because there are a lot of questions about how long can we pump and how long will it take to recharge the aquifer if depleted, Stewart said. The study determined it would take in the neighborhood of 500 to 1,300 years to recharge the aquifer in western Kansas, Stewart said. Water from the aquifer lies under 175,000 square miles in Kansas, Nebraska, South Dakota, Colorado, Oklahoma, Texas, Wyoming, and New Mexico. The aquifer first began declining in the 1960s because of irrigation needs. At the current rate, the aquifer will be 70% depleted by 2060, according to the study. And the Lawrence Journal World reported last week that supporters and opponents of the long-debated South Lawrence Trafficway Project now have a date to circle on the calendars. The Kansas Department of Transportation is scheduled to award a construction contract for the approximately $190 million project on September 18th. A few weeks later, crews should be moving dirt for the bypass project, which has been stalled amid litigation and environmental process since the early 1990s. And that's it for the news this week. I'm Mike Murphy, and now here's your host, Craig Lubow.
Thank you, Mike. Our topic tonight is the Concert for the Climate that is coming up on September 28th, later this month. And I have two guests here to talk about it. One is Shauna Zahner, and the other is Craig Wolf. Both of them are on the board of organization called HRES, which is the Heartland Renewable Energy Society. Welcome to both of you.
Hi.
Shauna, let me start with you. Just a little bit of background. What is HRES? What do they do?
We're a grassroots environmental organization, a nonprofit, and we try to encourage people to undertake endeavors of energy efficiency and then also to go on and perhaps explore renewable energy, such as solar panels or things like that.
Okay. And so tell me, Craig, if you can tell me, what is the climate Concert for the Climate about?
In a nutshell, what we're trying to do is create a situation where people who are interested in learning more about what they can begin doing to reduce their impact on climate change. We will have... Of course, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is our keynote speaker, and Bill McKibben, who's the founder of 350.org, we should probably explain what that means later on, he's our special guest. I'm sure, will be talking about the dilemma we face trying to get climate change legislation and action taken before it's too late. The carbon that's now in the atmosphere is going to be there for well over 100 years, so it's not like we can change overnight. So we need to start all governments, individuals, businesses, moving toward reducing the carbon that we produce. And so we will have workshops. We will have music, of course, the two speakers I just mentioned. We will have alternate fuel vehicles, children's activities. So just about any aspect of climate change will be addressed. Plus, we have businesses that are on the cutting edge of reducing impact on climate through renewable energy, and as well as environmental organizations who, it's their business, it's their mission to begin to educate people about what they can do.
And what are the groups that you, what are the music groups that are going to perform there?
Well, My Brothers and Sisters is one of the groups, and a lot of these groups I have not heard, but I am looking forward to it. She's a Keeper is another group, and Solar, S-O-U-L-A-R, that is my group. Randy Deitch and I formed that one, and for this event we have gone from being a duo to being a four-piece. Missouri Woodland will be there, Third Party from Joplin will be there, Victor James Doherty, and Green Spirit Band.
And Green Spirit, I believe that's one that Stan Slaughter is from.
Stan Slaughter, okay. That's right.
And for those who don't know him, he's a local singer that does a lot of environmental music, is that correct?
You bet. He was a natural candidate for us.
Okay. As far as the workshop, Sean, can you tell us a little bit about what workshops you're going to be offering?
We have a couple of things going on. We have what we're going to call a home performance pavilion tent, and that is going to have be set up like a home, and we're going to have actors actually acting out skits to sort of drive home the energy efficiency items in your house that you should be looking at and doing. And so we try to do it in sort of a comical way or a funny way to get people engaged. So we're going to have that going on a couple of times during the day. And then interspersed around Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s talk and Bill McKibben's talk and the home performance skits, we're going to have six other workshops. One of them focuses on just a practical overview of all the many different things that you can do to save energy or reduce your carbon footprint. A very good workshop is called Energy Audit Made Easy, where we're going to try to show people exactly what goes on in an energy audit. We have a local energy auditor that will be doing that workshop for us, and she's going to bring a blower door test and show what that does and other things that they use to do the test. But anyway, she's going to explain that, the process that they go through, what they're looking for, what you can do in your home to improve it, and all those type of things. So that's going to be a great workshop. We have one called the Comfort Zone, where we have another energy auditor that's going to do that for us, but he's going to talk about your heating and cooling systems on how to get the most out of your heating and cooling systems and different types of heating and cooling systems that you might be looking at if you're looking to save money in renovating in your home or something. We have a workshop about solar panels. It's called Sun 101, so we're going to have an expert, a local expert, that you can ask questions to and talk about perhaps adding solar electricity panels to your house. We have another workshop called All Things Electric, where we're going to have an EPA specialist talk to us about all the things in your home that you want to look for, have Energy Star labels, all the things, some things that you haven't really maybe thought about. We're going to try to go beyond the CFL bulbs a little bit, get a little bit further into that, and talk about the things in your house that can reduce energy use. And our final workshop then will be about what's next, is what it's called. And we're going to have a person that's going to talk about how you can go into your community or your area and talk to folks and spread the word and help other people really engage in energy efficiency measures. You can talk to them about what you've done and spread the word and how you can do that in your local clubs or your community or your churches or wherever you're engaged in the community to help spread the word about that. So that's it.
Okay. And as far as the electric vehicles that you're going to have there, Craig, can you tell us some about that?
Well, Clean Cities has helped organize some of the vehicles, plus the Midwest Electric Automobile Association. Is that right? Okay,
yes.
I got that right. Al Pugsley has been a big help with this in that capacity. And there will be, golly, 20 or 30 electric vehicles there on site. We will have something called Ride and Drive, where people will be able to say, to get in a vehicle and drive it. There's a giant parking lot there, and people will be able to drive around the parking lot. And plus there'll be representatives of the different manufacturers there. So if people are wanting to find out, well, what is this all about with electric vehicles, they will be able to find vehicles they like. Of various sizes.
Vehicles. They're going to be there and showing them off and asking. You can ask questions to them, and they can tell you all about how long they take to charge, where they can get them charged, and they'll tell you all about the electric car charging stations around town. So really give you a lot of information to make people feel more confident about going in the direction of an electric car.
Will the cars all be the all-electric, or are you going to also have some of the hybrid plug-ins?
I am not sure. I don't know for sure, but we have some other alternative vehicles, too, some compressed natural gas vehicles and things like that as well.
I'd be surprised if there weren't some hybrid vehicles there, given that we've got electric and compressed natural gas and propane-type vehicles there. So I'm sure they'll have many flavors.
And, Craig, you mentioned before your group is solar.
Yeah.
Before the break, if you want to play one of your songs now, and then maybe we'll have some time to play a second song in the next part.
All right. Well, this is a song that talks about change, because the Earth is going to be changing, and if we're going to fix the Earth, our species is going to have to do some changing, too. And that leads directly into the title of the song, which is called Book of the Heart. These are the times of the changes to come. And you say, but where shall I start? Begin with the pages inside of you. You must read from the book of your heart. You must look to the book of your heart. The mountains, mighty forests, farmlands rich with grain. But will our children know them? Will they be the same? Will you and I live proudly or in shame? But you say I am just one, the weight's too great to bear. And I say we are all one, the weight we all must share. We've but to heed the great ones everywhere. Oh, please, the stakes are so great, do we care? Shall we dare? No, love, you can be alone, you can breathe love, sing I am, I am. Have a love, you can hold love, you can sing the love, sing I am, I am. Change your heart. Results are guaranteed if each one plays their part. And now she cries to warn us,
You're not so smart. We're backs against the wall. It's time to start. Change the heart. Change the heart. No love, you can be alone. You can breathe love. Sing, I am, I am. Have a love, you can hold love. You can sing the love. Sing, I am, I am. Say I'll change it. No one else to arrange it. Only you can say I'll change it. No one else to arrange it. These are the times of the changes to come. These are the times of the changes to come. These are the times. These are the times. Yes, these are the times of the changes to come, and I have found where I'll start. Oh, I will start with the pages inside of me. I shall look to the book of my shall live from the book of my heart.
Thank you, Craig. We are going to our first break now, and then we will be right back.
Hi, I'm Robin Posen, author of Go Only as Fast as Your Slowest Part Feels Safe to Go. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about being gentle with our exhausted selves.
New Dimensions airs at 5 a.m. on Tuesdays.
Gareth Porter on Syrian Intelligence and Mary Botari on Larry Summers on Counterspin. Now on at a new time, tonight at 6:30, right after mic check.
Okay, we're back now. Thank you for joining us. Craig, can you mention, if you want to mention the website, and also I believe, I don't think we mentioned the location of the event yet.
Concert for the Climate is at, we find all kinds of information at our website, which, oddly enough, is called concertfortheclimate.org. And there's a schedule up there, there's directions up there, there's all kinds of information that you might need. And the location is going to be Caw Point Riverfront Park, which is right at the confluence or the joining of the Missouri and the Caw River or Kansas River. And it is one magical place. And if you don't mind, I've got a little story that goes along with that that ties into Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Sure.
Robert F. Kennedy Jr. started an organization called Water Keepers, and then an offshoot of that was River Keepers. And we have a river keeper, Laura Caldwell, who does a great job of keeping the Caw River as pristine as possible and adding boat access ramps so people can canoe the river. And so in one of their meetings, they had Robert F. Kennedy Jr. come down to Caw Point Riverfront Park with Mayor Marinovich. And when they were there, the thing was not yet a park. And there was trash and empty 55-gallon drums, and it was just kind of a mess. But it was a cool location because you could see the two rivers come together, and the Kaw Point is literally where Lewis and Clark camped out for 5 days on their way, on their journey to map the Louisiana Purchase. And one of the news broadcasters says, "Mr. Kennedy, what do you think of this location?" And he said, "That's simple. A squandered resource or a missed opportunity." And Laura Caldwell, the current riverkeeper, her husband is Mike Caldwell. And Mike looked over at Carol Marinovich, and they kind of nodded at each other. And that moment is when the concept for Kaw Point Riverfront Park was born. You can go up on the website and see some photos. It now is literally a magical location. It has hiking paths. There's two stages that we will utilize. One of the stages where Kennedy and McKibben will speak. The audience is going to be looking at Kennedy and McKibben, and behind them they will see the Kansas River or the Kaw River and see Kansas City, Missouri in the background. So it is really a beautiful location. It's a great place that you can bring your entire family and walk the paths, learn about the environment, learn about climate change, hear great music. There's going to be great food there, but I should mention that Mike Caldwell became the manager for the creation of the park. And so here you have Mike Caldwell, who created the park, and he also has built boat ramps for canoes, access ramps, up and down the Kaw River. So Mike Caldwell and Laura Caldwell have become quite a dynamic duo when it comes to helping the Kaw River.
What are some of the sponsors that you have for this?
Well, I'm looking here at our flyer, which you can get our flyer up on the website, too, by the way. And you can post it up in your office and ride people to come to the event. But Missouri Gas and Electric, Kansas City, Missouri, the Sierra Club, the Kansas Group of the Sierra Club, Kansas City Power and Light, Clean Cities, along with Metropolitan Energy Center. They're kind of a duo there. They one sponsors the other. The Electric Auto Association, Postie Cars, the Board of Public Utilities over in KCK, Wyandotte County. They call it unified government. I have a hard time accepting that it's not called Kansas City, Kansas anymore. Where are you from? I'm from the unified government. Oh, okay. And then Huey is another sponsor. Plus, we have just dozens of environmental groups and businesses that will also be there that are supporting the event.
Okay. And I noticed on the schedule when you went through the workshop, Shauna, is it looks like each of them are scheduled separately, so that if somebody wants to go to all of the workshops, they would be able to do that?
They sure would. They're scheduled workshops. They're only going to last about 20 minutes. There's some time afterwards for asking questions. But, yes, we've scheduled them all so that you can attend every single workshop, and you can watch the home performance skits, and you can catch all the speakers and everything so you don't miss a thing. There also is going to be a great tent for the kids. There's going to be activities for the kids. There's going to be an eco car there for them to play with, get in, push buttons on, to hear information about the environment. So that's going to be really fun for the kids. And as Craig mentioned, we're also going to have a lot of local food vendors there that are having local foods and homemade foods. And they're all excited. We have about 8 different ones, so there's going to be all kinds of different good local foods.
And when you say local, will a lot of it also be organic food?
Mm-hmm. There will be some organic things there, too, as well, yes.
Right. I should also mention that if people know KCK, that the Kaw Point Riverfront Park is right off of Fairfax Avenue, very close to I-70. and we've got directions that from the website that they'll bring you in from the east side or bring you in from the west side of I-70. But it's literally you get on Fairfax Avenue off I-70 and then you immediately turn right into a big parking lot that will lead you to the park.
All right. So it'd be if you were going in the direction of the auto plant.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what is the... Oh.
I forgot to mention.
Yes.
It is free. There is no charge. This is a free gift to Kansas City.
And what was the inspiration, I guess, with a better word, for you to come up with the idea of doing this?
We were in a board meeting, and we felt in the board meeting that we do workshops, and we get 15 or 20 people there, and we do the annual homes tour. And we just felt like we had to do something to have a bigger impact. And so I was saying to the board, you know, I picked up my guitar again and started playing. I've got this group. And one of the board members said, well, why don't we organize a concert? And so that began the process right there. And we began brainstorming. Who would be a draw for this concert? And then we said, well, we could get Neil Young or all these people. But I had seen Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on a morning talk show called Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski. And Robert F. Kennedy Jr. talked about, in his kind of gravelly voice, and he said, why would we use coal and oil straight from hell when we could use wind and solar from God's heaven? And I thought, oh, my God, what beautiful words. It was just such a great analogy that he did. In fact, I even wrote a song about that using some of his language.
I had heard Bobby Kennedy speak a few years ago at UMKC, and he really was a very dynamic speaker on the environment.
Yeah.
We're looking forward to having him, yeah.
And then you also have Bill McKibben coming. Can you tell me a little bit about what he does with 350.org?
Well, it was just kind of like providence that we were able to get Bill McKibben, because we found out that he's going to be here the night before our event, and then he's going down to Wichita the next day for a book signing. So our people contacted his people. You know how that goes. And he was excited, ready, willing, and able to come. And his organization, 350.org, well, what is 350.org? Well, 350 represents the parts per million of carbon in the atmosphere that we need to get back down to. Recently, we've gone up to 400 parts per billion, and in order for us to maintain no greater than a 2 degrees increase of temperatures in Celsius, so that's 3.6 Fahrenheit, we would need to get our carbon level back down to 350. So hence the name 350.org. And he is a remarkable advocate for the climate. I call him Mr. Climate Change. He's an author, and he will be quite compelling at the event.
And he's coming in Friday night, actually, for a book signing, a book he wrote, and Rainy Day Books is sponsoring that. And then Rainy Day Books will also be at our event, and you can get a book signed by him there.
Okay. And before you leave, Craig, if we can have you perform one more song.
I'll do a short one then.
Okay. Now, after you leave, we'll be back for about another 5 minutes with Shauna. We will have, I think, time to take one or maybe two calls. So if you have a question of Shauna, you can call in at 816-931-5534. Okay, Craig?
And this one I can't help not do. I did it the last time I was here, but for this event and for my group, it is extremely appropriate. It's called Solar Prayer, spelled the normal way as opposed to my group, which is spelled S-O-U-L-A-R, but Solar Prayer is the name of this song.
sun of our earth. Give us food and warmth to grow. And sun for the children. Give them time, the time to know. And sun of our day, light the truth so we might learn. And sun of our darkest nights, give us faith for your return. And sun of our soul, give us wisdom from above. And sun of our hearts, fulfill them with your love, love, love.
Thank you, Craig.
You bet. We
have to, Craig has to leave at this time for another engagement, so we are going to take our second break, and then we'll be back with a few more minutes with Shauna, and if you have any phone calls.
A panel discussion following the showing of Corporate FM, a film which uses the demise of Casey's KY-102 and Lawrence's The Laser to highlight a national epidemic on the next forum, Wednesday at 6 p.m.
This week on The Bioneers, Revolution from the Heart of Nature.
It was a culture that at its root was a we culture. How do we undo the homeless culture and come home where it's we again?
I'm Neil Harvey. It's Betting Big on a Dream, Coming Home to a We Culture with Tribal Chairman Greg Saris on The Bioneers.
Friday morning at 9:30, right after Between the Lines.
Okay, welcome back, and we have a phone call. Can we have your name and where you're calling from, please?
I'm good.
Okay. All right. Can we have your name and your phone number? Not your phone number, but where you're calling from. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, we don't have a call. All right. Shauna, we've got a few more questions. You mentioned one of the workshops is going to be on the efficiency. And for those, hopefully everybody is tuned in today, will be able to attend. But for those who can't, can you go through just a few tips on what kind of efficiency you're going to be promoting?
Well, we want to focus on home energy efficiency mostly. That's what this whole thing is about. We generally have a home energy or a homes tour, a solar homes tour, in conjunction with the American Solar Energy Society every fall. And this year we decided to do this instead. But focusing on home energy savings is one of the biggest things that you can do. And we found that most people don't know that you can have something called an energy audit done to your home. It's not terribly costly for the amount of information that they give you. Even the most recently constructed home, they found leaks energy like a sieve generally, unless it is specifically designed and built to be energy efficient. There are several in our area that are, but for the most part, most homes are still, if you did a blower door test on them, they still leak, like they have a 3-foot square hole in the side of the house. So there's a lot of energy being lost in your heating and cooling going right out. And an energy auditor is a person we want to promote as a person that can come and they really do a comprehensive look at your house. They look in your attic. They look at your insulation. They look at the air sealing. They look at, they find out if there are ducts that are in places, ductwork that is in attic spaces that are not heated and cooled, or if they're not connected properly, or they're going to check your combustion equipment to make sure that you're going to have healthy indoor air quality. They're going to show you places where you can make small adjustments. You can do them many times yourself by using caulk guns and sealing up things. So we're just hoping to inform more people about how to go about this, where they can get these types of services, and there's going to be lots of energy auditors there to answer your questions, and vendors in our exhibition tent. We're going to have an exhibition tent with also the people there that can help answer your questions and get you scheduled for an energy audit of your home.
Thank you. And that concludes this week's Eco Radio with this guest. We do have the calendar coming up and then a piece by Elaine Giesel.
Yeah, thanks, Craig. And the Sierra Club's concert group will meet tomorrow night at 6:45 at the Overland Park Lutheran Church, located at 79th and Lowell in downtown Overland Park. The guest speaker will be an expert gardener talking about winter gardening. Also, there will be a Kansas City Green Fair on Thursday, September 19th at 11 a.m. at Isles Davis Park. And that's, again, Isles Davis Park, Thursday, September 19th. And then on Saturday night, September 21st, there will be an action in Kansas City as part of a national 350.org event, starting at the City Market Park and walking up to the Heart of America Bridge with a pipeline. And the name of the event is Draw the Line, Stop Keystone XL, and that's on September 21st. And, of course, on September 28th, it's the Concert for the Climate. Now let's go into our piece with Elaine here, and that'll take us out to the end of the show. Tune in next week, folks.
All right. This is Elaine Giesel, host for Eco Radio tonight. And this is KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio in Kansas City. Tonight, I am honored to have as our guest Dr. Gary Schmeltz, who is going to be talking to us about his career in marine biology and as an environmental educator, and about a new book that he has called Journey to the Edge of Eden. Welcome, Gary.
Well, I'm glad to be here, Elaine. It's always exciting to talk about the environment, especially the one we have in the United States and especially those in Florida.
And what I was just going to say, you're in Florida now, in Naples, Florida, but you didn't start in Naples, did you?
No, I did not. I started out in the city. I was born in Jersey City, New Jersey, then moved uptown to Union City, New Jersey, which is just where the Lincoln Tunnel goes into New York City. So I was a city boy, not necessarily happy with the city environment, but through experiences I had with my father in particular, I got to love the outdoors, and we did a lot of fishing and exploring along the beaches, and eventually he and I got together down in Florida, through my work here in Florida, and his through retirement, and we spent a lot of time exploring the South Florida wilderness.
And you actually did academic work in zoology and in marine biology as well, did you not?
Yes. I got a degree in biology and then went to graduate school at the University of Delaware, where I got a master's degree in zoology and a doctorate in marine biology. We're actually focused on fisheries and studied fish populations while I was at graduate school.
And the issue has only become more important, I know, over the years. You also spent some time in the Navy, have some Navy experience on an oceanographic vessel. Is that something you can talk about, or would you have to kill me afterwards?
A situation where I got involved in having to, I joined the service And they actually put me on board a research vessel. It was after I had gotten my master's degree, and we did a lot of studies on the ocean bottom, and did a lot of camera work looking at the contours of the ocean bottom. We were involved with the International Geophysical Year, and we studied some of the volcanic activity up along Iceland. We went up along the polar ice caps. So Florida actually became a great change in environment because I got to study the northern cold environment, and then I got switched down into Florida where it was a heck of a lot warmer.
Well, let me ask you, Gary, as a marine biologist myself, I have a pretty good idea, but why should people here in the heartland, in the Kansas City area, really care about what's happening in Florida or what's happening in the ocean in general?
Well, the oceans are extremely important and probably still remain an undiscovered resource in many areas. We get a lot of our food from the ocean, and so there are other resources as well as food that come from that particular environment. We should be concerned as to what's happening in it. The oceans are just, from my perspective, one of the most wonderful regions on the planet. You know, they're important as far as the water cycle is concerned. They're important as far as, you know, mineral resources are concerned. What's happening in the Gulf of Mexico as far as drilling for oil should be of concern to everybody, and how it's impacting the natural marine life that's in that environment.
No, I absolutely agree, and I'm glad to hear you repeat some of the messages I've tried to send since Kansas City sits in the middle of the country, in the middle of the largest watershed that drains into our Gulf. It's apparent that we have very large impacts on the world oceans. Something that you have written about in the past, you've written a book on wildflowers of Florida, am I correct?
That is correct.
And you also lead paleontology tours for local groups and shelling tours. I mean, you were a Renaissance naturalist. I love to read about that.
Yeah, I've gotten so involved. My actual trip to Florida, my first job in Florida was actually working for the Deltona Corporation. And I suddenly realized after working for them how important it was for people to become aware of their natural surroundings and the natural resources affiliated with those surroundings. And it was obviously something that I think they weren't aware of. Many people were just coming to Florida. They were going to retire here. They were going to get a home built here. But they had no idea about what impact they were going to have upon the resources that were in this area. As I went along, I suddenly realized that, you know, a career working with Deltona, and it's something that's covered in the book, wasn't something that was going to last for me, and how important the educational aspect of the teaching people about the environment was. And so I got heavily involved in studying the natural resources of Florida, beginning with its geology and working all the way through its plant and animal life. And so over the years, I've gotten involved in writing books about wildflowers and studying the geology of Florida and talking to people about the fact that Florida is a very low, flat state and is highly impacted by tropical storms that come to this area. Our county, for instance, is only 50 feet above sea level.
And so climate change is very real.
Yes,
that is another impact we feel that the Heartland is having on our oceans, is that the coal-fired plants, the CO2 being emitted here in the Heartland, does impact climate change and will certainly affect low-lying coastal areas around Naples, for instance, Marcos Island, some of the areas that you were so fond of.
And ironically, Marco is the highest point in Collier County, which is the county we live in Naples, just north of the Big Cypress area. And I live on a piece of land that's only 13 feet above sea level. And as you go into the interior of Florida, the level of the height of the land actually declines to about 7 feet. And so a lot of what happens, a tropical storm comes in and it devastates this area. The last serious tropical storm that we've had, and I shouldn't say tropical storm, I should say hurricane, the last major hurricane that we had in Collier County was in 1960. And at that point, the winds reached 150 to 160 miles an hour. And so you can think of it almost as a tornado.
Right. And coming from the heartland, we get that.
Right.
Right. Well, tell me. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, you have mentioned one of the areas that interests you is understanding the lack of knowledge that children have about their environment. You've spent some time working at nature centers and working with conservancies here in Florida. Have you found ways to get kids more educated about the environment that are particularly effective?
Yes. When I started the Big Cypress Nature Center, and I really had no idea what it was like to take children out into the environment because I'd been trained as a researcher, and it was my very first frightening experience to take children out for the first time and actually see what it was like out of doors. And it was amazing to me how little they knew about the outdoors and about the natural environment that surrounded them. I would have children's classes. I started off with a five-day field trip programs. And at that time, back in 1971, 72, the school system actually helped support those educational programs. And later on, the Conservancy helped support those educational programs. So we had kind of a partnership that helped us pay for taking these children out into the outdoors and having them experience some of the things that were happening out on these islands and along the beaches and in the swamps in South Florida. Unfortunately, that has changed. A lot of the focus now has pulled away. It's much more towards testing and using computers, and so the children do not get out as much as they used to. But I found a number of different techniques that I employed. Beyond field trips, there were all kinds of activities that were designed to get the children aware. One was a sight and sound show, which made them listen to the different sounds that they heard out in the fields and try to recognize what kind of creature was producing that sound. Another was a mystery box where we had them feel some of the different things that we found, such as leaves or bones of creatures that I would discover when I was out on nature hikes, and try to have them identify those different things. All these things seemed to work wonderfully, but the best thing was just getting them outdoors and into the woods and onto the beaches so that they could actually see these habitats that books talk about, computers talk about, but they don't necessarily get a chance to observe directly. I remember once taking a young girl out, and we were out on the beach, and we had a number of activities that we were talking about on that beach environment, and I asked her to do one thing for me, and she said, "What?" And she said, "I want you to turn and face into the wind." And there was this big pause, and then she said, "What is wind?" She had no idea.
And that's frightening. Why is it so important then to reach out to children and get them engaged in outdoors? What do you think, is that more important than educating adults?
I think it's children are very impressionable, and they absorb the message very clearly. And I think that's really, I found children as young as 4 years old being extremely receptive and remembering everything that they've experienced. Now, it is important for the adults, too, when we do geology activities to show people where the ocean is. The adults don't respond exactly in the same way, especially here in Florida. They come here to think about retirement, and I'll take them out to a quarry, and I'll point to the quarry wall, which in Florida will show marine shells and marine deposits all the way up to near the surface, and they'll get the message. They understand that, you know, Florida is going to go back underneath the ocean, that this global warming that's occurring is going to bring about a resubmergence of the Florida Peninsula. But they don't worry about it because they figure, I'm not going to live long enough, and it's not going to mean that much to me. But on the other hand, with the children, it is going to mean a lot to them. It's going to mean that, you know, the places that they see, the places that they love and that they want to preserve, have to be treated gently and have to be treated respectfully if they expect to have them in the future.
Well put. And since I work at a nature center as well, I've experienced some of the same emotions, some of the same reactions to being outdoors. And it's important, I find, sometimes to assure parents that they can be teachers as well. You don't have to have a park naturalist to create an environment where they can listen to sounds or they can touch things they've never touched before. But you're correct that, you know, getting to the children and getting involved is so important, which really brings me to talking about your experience with your father's impact, and why you decided to write this book. Tell me a little bit about it.
Well, actually, my father pulled me aside one day, and he said to me, you know, I would really like somebody to hear about the life that you and I had shared. And I was really surprised. You know, I was sitting down, and I said, well, could I see some of the things that you've written? And I went through them, and I said, well, this is really a great thing to do. Unfortunately, he passed away before he got very much further on in the development of this story that he wanted to tell. So I just decided one day that I was going to finish his book, and I was going to tell the story about how, you know, we developed an interest in the outdoors. We, of course, came from the city, and we actually had to go quite a distance to find any woods or wilderness areas, and neither one of us liked being in the city, but for Dad it was a place that he had a job and, you know, and he could make a living. And for me it was just, I was a young boy and I didn't have any choice. I had to stay with my parents. But then, you know, as things progressed further and further along, we began to show and understand and have a greater appreciation for the natural environment and natural world that we lived in. And I think that continued to develop not only throughout my graduate research period, but also the many years that we spent in Florida. He spent probably 13, 14 years hiking with me through the wilderness areas and just admiring what a wonderful and beautiful area South Florida was. And, of course, that could be true of any site that any of us share with our fathers and with our parents.
And that's very interesting. And the name of the book is Journey to the Edge of Eden. And the author I'm speaking with today here at KKFI is Dr. Gary Schmeltz. If anyone listening wants to find your book, the author's name is spelled S-C-H-M-E-L-Z. That's S-C-H-M-E-L-Z, first name Gary. And the name of the book is Journey to the Edge of Eden. Why that title, Gary?
A good question. It was, from my perspective, it was a journey that my father and I shared into from a very from a city environment into a very beautiful habitat here in Southwest Florida. It's not quite Eden, but it comes as close as probably we can expect Eden to be. And there are just so many beautiful regions here. The Sacahatchee Strand is one of the most beautiful swamps that anyone has ever seen in this world. I mean, it's festooned with all kinds of orchids and bromeliads, and the wildlife are just gorgeous to see. And we spent many hours doing this, and we kept talking about it, and eventually we kept thinking, well, you know, this really is an Eden. It's really a special place, and it was worth preserving, and we wanted to make sure that through the book and also through my educational activities that hopefully we could preserve it for future generations.
Sounds good. It sounds fascinating. I've been down in that part of the world, but I did not stop at Big Cypress when I was there. I had little kids with me and made other stops, of course. Tell me, would you describe the book as mostly a biography or a natural history book, both?
It's a combination of both biographical, describing my father's early life and then my early life and then our gradual love of the out-of-doors and the environment that surrounded us and some of the amazing things that happened to us. It just was something, I love to do, get outdoors, and it's something I think the book will bring out. And I think most people that have read it so far really enjoy it.
There's a fair amount of information out there today. I mean, since Richard Louv's book on that focused on nature deficit disorder, give me one thing that you would encourage parents to do to get their kids to be more involved in the outdoors.
Well, any outdoor activities will certainly encourage their involvement in the outdoors, whether it be fishing or hiking, mountain climbing, anything that will get them to see the beauty of their surroundings. I remember once being out in the swamp, my father would follow me, and when I was doing my research in graduate school, and we would get out into that swamp, and I would collect different specimens that I was going to bring back to the laboratory, and I remember one day he just stopped, and he looked out over the marsh, and the mallows were in bloom, and, the sun was kind of near setting, and it would create this golden color to the marsh grasses, and he said, you know, when you come out, it's here, he said, this is really a beautiful world. You know, and he said, it's something really special. He said, whenever you come out to do research, always take some time out to enjoy the beautiful surroundings that are here because, you know, life is so very short.
You're indeed. Sometimes we miss the forest because we're too busy looking at each individual tree. I was tickled when you said your dad took you fishing, and I mean, that was one of my first outdoor experiences as well, and I've often thought of The Complete Angler. Our first real book of natural history was based on experiences, you know, fishing and being able to observe the world, what was going on both in the aquatic world and the world above it. And I often tell the kids that I work with in camp, go fishing. Take your kids, you know, your parents fishing. This is a good way to learn about the real world. So we shared that introduction to nature, I think.
Yeah, it certainly is. And, you know, we even beyond fishing, you know, sometimes when we were fishing, he would just take time out to pull the boat up onto the shoreline, and we would spend, an hour, maybe an hour and a half, not fishing, but actually looking for the critters that were right in the intertidal zone and trying to determine what they were and, you know, what they were doing there. So it added to that experience of fishing and gave a more complete look at our surroundings.
You know, we don't have intertidal zones here in Kansas City, unfortunately, Gary, but I will encourage folks to go to one of our local nature centers. We have good prairies that you can explore. We have bits and pieces of riparian forests you can explore. We do have ticks right now and some poison ivy to watch out for, but it really doesn't matter that you don't have the ocean. There is plenty out there. Get your kids outdoors. It's so important that we conserve our environment. We teach our kids to have that appreciation for the environment. It is, again, journey to the edge of Eden and see what it means to have a parent who serves as an inspiration to their children, gets them outdoors, and teaches them to appreciate our world. Gary, I appreciate very much your time spent with us, and we look forward, perhaps, to seeing your book when it arrives. And thank you for speaking with us.
Sure, Elaine, it was great speaking to you.
Anything you would want to add?
No, I think that we pretty much covered it, but I just, you know, really excited about the book and, the opportunity to get it, to write it for my father. And, it was a wonderful thing.
Excellent. Thank you very much, and good evening.
Thank you, Elaine.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio.